to a podcast called Intrepid. My name is Craig Forsees. I'm here with Stephanie Carvin in Stephanie's office at the Norman Patterson School of International Affairs at Carleton University, high above the Rideau River.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. A bit misty
it's
today.
It's beautiful. It's misty. It's beautiful. But my goodness, the leaves are putting on a show.
What are we doing today, Stephanie?
Well, we're going to have like a podcast light. We're just, you know, there's so many stories that we just haven't had a chance to get
to. We're you know, basically doing little podcasts and then longer podcasts, and we're just trying to keep up.
Yeah. So hopefully somewhere in the, you get your Intrepid podcast full in the middle. But I just wanted to focus on some of the cybersecurity news. October is, of course, Women's History Month, but it's also Cybersecurity Month, which has got to be better than Infrastructure Week for those of you who are following what's happening in the States. But I think there's three stories we want to touch on. The first, of course, is a series of indictments that came out at the same time last week with the UK, Dutch, American, and Canadian governments each issuing statements and in some cases indictments of Russian intelligence figures who have been engaging in cyber activity and espionage activity. There's a really crazy story from Bloomberg about whether or not China was able to manage to get a chip on certain motherboards and the implication there for various U.S. companies and U.S. technologies, including the U.S. intelligence community. And then this actually relates to a different story in Canada, which had come out the week before, about whether or not Canada actually has the technical capability to find such digital interference. And finally, CSE is briefing provinces on election threats, but it seems to be not so bad so far.
Great. All right. So do you want to tell the story about these recent events in Europe and also North America? And I guess we'll focus on the Canadian aspect to this, but it's a broader international campaign outing Russian GRU-sponsored cyber something. I don't know what they call it, attacks or espionage, but cyber interference of some sort involving international organizations and also state organizations.
So, right. It's Intrepid podcast story time, except the Carvin version. Here we go.
And it's a true story.
Yes, and it's a true story. There's no Bob from Mordor yet.
Ah.
Or is there? Okay. So basically, we have, again, the UK, Dutch, American, and Canadian governments all simultaneously came out last Thursday, and said, basically called out the Russian government for its activities involving espionage and other kind of clandestine foreign influence activities. Now, Canada, they basically said the RCMP is investigating, and what they're investigating is an attempt by, apparently, the Russian government, I believe the GRU, was trying to break into, through cyber means, the World Anti-Doping Association.
Which is based WADA, in Montreal.
Which is based in Montreal, right. And then this came out at the same time the FBI issued indictments for similar activity as well. The UK government kind of blasted Russia for a series of activities, and not, you know, obviously the whole Skripal poisoning, which we've been talking about all year. They talked about that, but then they also talked about how the Russians have been trying to mess with that investigation as well, trying to break into the various police forces, trying to investigate that particular threat. And the Dutch, they have been upset with the Russian activity with the OPCW, and you can actually watch the Dutch government, who, as far as I'm aware, have never done this before. They have never actually come out and talked about an espionage operation in their country in this way. And I mean, my goodness, there was some interesting developments there. There was, it seems that the Russians came, they were pretty much picked up right away. The Dutch were able to follow them. They were trying to, I think, hack into the OPCW by kind of hanging out outside and I guess trying to break into a Wi-Fi connection. But the people they picked up, one of them had a taxi receipt for a trip from Russian intelligence headquarters to the airport. They all arrived using sequential passport numbers. I mean, kind of really surprising mistakes. I mean, I don't want to focus on that. I just think it is noteworthy. And there has been a debate, at least on social media, you know, is the carelessness deliberate to basically make the story ridiculous, or do they care that they're being caught? I don't know, but it is interesting that some of these kinds of mistakes are being made. So getting back to Canada, I think the main issue is really, this is an example of espionage and clandestine foreign influence activities on Canadian soil, which we don't often pay attention to. Everyone's kind of flipping out about foreign fighters in Canada, which we'll talk about in a podcast coming up. But really, this is an important thing that I think Canadians need to be aware of and appreciate, that Russians are trying to hack into institutions on Canadian soil. And I guess the questions I had from this is, you know, Bob for Mordor and his nefarious Instapots.
So Bob's original plot was the foreign intelligence plot that we talked about in episode, I think it was 48 or 47.
Yeah, right, where he was talking to Alice in Isengard.
Yeah, which was sparked by a genuine federal court decision that, well, to define the scope of CSIS's foreign intelligence mandate. And so you're suggesting that that case, we're playing Intrepid Mosaic?
Yeah.
and you're suggesting that perhaps that case may be tied to the WADA stuff?
We don't know. Yeah. It's hard to say if that case is, but I mean, there are similarities in activity. Clearly, it's a clandestine... It's some kind of foreign influence or espionage activity. It's aimed at an international body.
Yeah.
And clearly there are people who were based in Canada. We knew, you know, Russians, they don't just operate in Ottawa. They're everywhere. There's a Russian consulate in Montreal. And by and large, this could have been related. We don't know.
And there was a bunch of PNGing, right? Some persona non grata from the Russian consular and diplomatic staff several months ago. Tied to undeclared intelligence agent status and some sense that they were up to no good. We didn't know the specifics, but so all this may be a bundle is what you're suggesting.
It's possible. I mean, that's pure speculation on my part, but it's kind of interesting. I mean, in theory, the expulsions were, or the persona non grata status of these people were related to the kind of solidarity with the Brits,
right?
Because
that was the trigger.
Right? But what was the activities that they were engaged in that allowed them to basically persona non grata them? It may have been this, right? This kind of activity. So there's a number. You have to wonder if this storyline of all our storylines are coming together.
It's the
end of season one or something.
Well, okay, the cliffhanger. Let's play with that, because I confess the same thought occurred to me. So the original story that sparked our the invitation for Bob from Mordor to participate in our conversations regularly in this podcast was a foreign intelligence operation. So a foreign intelligence operation under the CSIS Act is by definition not a security intelligence operation. So first thing is, by process of elimination, is WADA, and let's say it's a hack against WADA, and I've read somewhere that the Russians are targeting the World Anti-Doping Agency in an effort to reveal confidential athlete data to suggest they're not the only ones doping. And so it's part of an effort to
But also a bunch of data of athletes was actually leaked onto the internet. Right.
So the question is, would that activity in Canada against an international organization be a security intelligence matter for CSIS? And so does it amount to espionage or sabotage? Maybe not. I mean, maybe it's not a great fit. So is it foreign influenced activity? Well, the foreign influenced activity has to be within or relating to Canada and detrimental to the interests of Canada. All right, so does it relate to Canada if you're hacking an international organization based in Canada, and is that detrimental to Canada? Well, I mean, I could make that argument, right? I could say that it certainly relates to Canada in the sense that the international organization is here in Canada, and it's in Canada's interest to be able to provide protection for those international organizations headquartered here. In fact, you could make the argument that it's one of our obligations, because these international organizations tend to have the same privileges and immunities as diplomatic premises, and we are obliged to protect those. So it could be, in that sense, foreign-influenced activity, which would make it security intelligence. The problem is, it might be a bit of a reach, and if you're going to get an invasive surveillance warrant, you have to go to federal court and you have to persuade the federal court that this is actually a security intelligence matter that justifies a Section 12 investigation giving you that warrant. If you got that warrant, by the way, you could travel wherever, because it's extraterritorial. Right, it doesn't have the same territorial limitation. But the issue might well be that you could never persuade a federal court that that's really a security intelligence matter, in which case it's foreign intelligence. It's about the activities of a foreign state. It's not necessarily tied to the security of Canada. And if that's the case, if it's a Section 16 investigation, then that invasive activity, or any activity, frankly, that you're engaged in, has to be within the territory of Canada. And if you're talking about the GRU working in cooperation, perhaps, with assets in the embassy, doing a hacking on WADA, some of that's going to be taking place outside of Canada, and you can't follow that trail. So it could fit, right? It could be the story we're talking about here. And if it's not the story, it's impossible to construct it as a hypothetical. So that's really interesting. So from the covert perspective, who would be left to look at what, you know, the GRU's up to from Russia? Well, there, CSE would have a foreign intelligence mandate because they're entitled to collect foreign intelligence against persons who are not citizens or present in Canada. And so they could be the outward bound eyes. So maybe there wouldn't be such a huge gap. But yeah, so it raises all sorts of interesting conundrums.
Yeah, it's not clear that this was the issue that Justice Noel was ruling on, but there are some interesting kind of touchstones here. But it also shows to a large extent, like, the fact that this isn't an automatic fit for any of our intelligence services suggests that, is this a problem going forward? Well, and is this something we have to deal with?
And to refer back to our second encounter with Bob from Order, when we talked about the CSE's mandate under the C-59, where they have active and defensive cyber. So without active or defensive cyber, CSE couldn't really do anything to stop Fancy Bear or whoever the Russian APT was, the Advanced Persistent Threat was, or the hacking effort against WADA. They couldn't do anything to stop it because they wouldn't have that active measures or defensive measures mandate. So right now they could collect intelligence but not do anything about it. So yeah, it's a bit of a problem, right? So again, so referring back to CSIS, if this was a Section 12 investigation, CSIS could have threat disruption powers. But if it's not a Section 12 and is instead a foreign intelligence, there's not much you can do.
Right. So let's just call this podcast a make work project for everybody.
Well, you know, we should talk about the cops, though, right? So you said the RCMP are investigating. So yes. What would they be investigating? So let's say in terms of criminal code offenses, probably unauthorized use of a computer or mischief in relation to computer data, which would probably capture hacking of this sort. There, you know, it would have to be within the territory of Canada because the criminal code typically only applies within the territory of Canada. But, you know, there's that wrinkle we've talked about in the past. The case from the Supreme Court involving the telemarketer scheme, right? So telemarketer in Toronto tries to defraud people in the United States in relation to a scheme in Costa Rica. Does a Canadian court have jurisdiction? Yeah, because part of the offense took place in Canada. And so if Russian hackers are reaching out from St. Petersburg and completing their crime in Montreal, that's probably enough of a nexus or a real and substantial link to Canada to ground a criminal code offense for these sorts of hacking crimes. The reality is that that's going to be tough to investigate. And if you do bring charges, like it is for the U.S., right, it'll be a largely symbolic effort. Is it worth doing? Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any problem with bringing symbolic charges in cases like this.
Yeah, like, well, the U.S. brings indictments like this all the time. And I think actually they've been using them to great diplomatic effect. And I don't think we should shy away from that tool either. It's part of diplomacy.
Yeah. So that's it. That's intrepid speculation time.
Instead of story time, it's just pure non-facted.
Irresponsible speculation.
Totally. Take nothing we say seriously. I have a lawyer here, so you can vouch for me. Okay, so the second story, this is another crazy story. If you haven't seen it, last week Bloomberg came out with a story that basically suggested that China was able to get a extremely small microchip, and they compared it to the size of a pencil. It's just would be basically like just the very tip of a pencil, and that they were able to get this on certain motherboards of U.S. technology companies, including Apple and Amazon, as well as InQtel, which is I believe the technology arm of the CIA. There was some kind of relationship there. So there's been a lot of pushback on this story that Amazon Web Services, AWS, Apple, they've categorically denied that anything in the story is true. The story, it should be said, is only using unnamed sources. There is, I think, 19 sources of the story, none of whom go on record for saying this. So we don't know. We just haven't have a he said, corporation said, in terms of an actual story here. But basically, it's interesting because it implies, you know, it kind of plays into this idea that China continues to engage in espionage activity, that, you know, this is an ongoing challenge, that trying to find all the holes in the technology that could be there remains a challenge. It kind of plays into a sum of all fear situation where China, it doesn't sound like anything was successful, but it could have been that China could have had access to like major cloud storage of information, and God knows what they could do with it. So we don't know what's happened here, and it's interesting. And the reason I bring it up is because there's a Canadian angle to the story, which is that one of the ways that this chip was found was apparently you have like a third party lab. So here in Southern Ontario, although I don't think Ottawa counts as Southern Ontario, but well, we're more Eastern Ontario. But they found the chip, right? Because they were paid to do kind of the red teaming to try and test the technology to make sure it's okay. And so this Canadian company, which is unnamed in the story, allegedly found this chip on the board. And so there's another bizarre twist on top of that, not just the Canadian connection. But previous to that, a week earlier, Bob Fyfe in the Globe and Mail wrote a story about a allegedly secret meeting that took place where someone, and they don't say who, but some individuals from the U.S. intelligence community came up to the U.S. embassy in Ottawa and decided to brief opposition MPs, or at least one opposition MP, and someone from Citizen Lab on...
And Citizen Lab being the NGO in from the Toronto. University of Toronto.
Yeah, University of Toronto, who's been very critical of the CSE and things like that, but they decided to brief them. And that's also surprising because it's not like Citizen Lab hasn't been critical of the U.S. government, but that's a whole other story. Brief them on why Canada was not actually able to manage the tech threat from China. And so if listeners will recall, the way Canada has decided to proceed with telecommunications firm where we have concerns, such as Huawei, Chinese firms, is that we're going to test them. We're going to set up labs where the technology will be, we're going to test it to see if there's any holes in it. We're going to be looking to see if there's anything that we need to worry about it. And we will be constantly working with the company to make sure it's safe. This is the approach that the UK takes. Their National Cybersecurity Center, our Canadian Cybersecurity Center, is doing the same. And New Zealand takes the same approach. Australia and the United States take the approach that, no, we have to ban all this technology. And the United States is clearly upset at Canada's approach to Huawei, that they don't feel it's sufficiently secure. So they tried to then have this meeting at the U.S. Embassy where I'm told they didn't actually inform any Canadian government people that they were going to do this, which is a little...
undiplomatic.
It's a little on the nose. A little bit on the nose.
How Trumpian.
I won't comment on that. But what as in tries to be clandestine, but ultimately fails. Mm. Anyways, they had this meeting, and so where they tried to basically to undermine the CSE the very same week that the CCSC was opening, which again is kind of on the nose. But I mean, we know that the United States is unhappy about Canada's relations with China. We have seen this in the new USMCA. Basically, they tried to do this and said Canada is not technically capable of managing the Chinese cybersecurity threat. So bringing this all together, it's interesting that a Canadian third-party lab, according to Bloomberg, I have no idea of the truth of this, and frankly, the Canadian intelligence community is being very quiet about any of this. We haven't heard a peep out of them as to whether or not this is true. But a Canadian third-party lab was able to find a cyber threat on some extremely sensitive technology that neither Amazon, Apple, or other companies, possibly the CIA, was using or going to use. And that kind of flies in the face of everything that the Americans were trying to tell Canadian opposition MPs and Citizen Lab in Canada. Boom.
Well, it would be very impolite for Canadians to point out the irony of that.
Well, it would.
So we won't.
Of course. The end.
So what's left? What else have we got?
Just very briefly, I thought it was worth noting Alex Boutelier wrote a story last week on how the federal government is actually briefing provinces on electoral interference threat. And we've had some wild and wacky elections here in Canada recently, and it seems that it's the CSE has actually been giving these briefings to the provincial governments, and so far it doesn't seem to be a lot of foreign influence in this space. So fears that we've had is that we will see large amounts of foreign influence, and CSE particularly said in their study from last year that they were worried not so much at the federal level but the provincial level. And so if we're not seeing it there, that's probably a good sign, but it could always still happen. But it's interesting that we're starting to see this idea that our intelligence services are going to have to start working with some pretty non-traditional partners in order to protect elections and to not only just protect elections, but to reassure Canadians about the safety and security of their elections. Because if we don't believe that our elections are safe or secure, that's actually also a problem. And this kind of goes on the threat. I think that we haven't seen a lot of Russian foreign influence yet in the U.S. midterms yet. We don't know if that will happen, but I think, you have to wonder, after all the attention that the Russians have been getting, are they trying to maybe lay off a little bit? There's been a bunch of elections in Europe. Perhaps they've just been focusing more on those, such as Latvia, where you know, it seems like a pro-Russia party may have now taken power, but that's a podcast issue for another day.
Yeah, or they're getting better, or they've lit the fire and now can walk away and let the fire tend to itself.
Yeah, and it's a self-feeding fire. Yeah, it's doing pretty good from what I can tell. So I just wanted to highlight really those kind of cyber stories this week. Because
we're going to have to do a full court press at some point because we're almost exactly a year out from the next federal election. So we're going to have to bring in, we keep saying we're going to bring in Mike Powell to talk about C-76. But we're going to have to come back to this and sort of update everyone on where that legislation stands. But there's so much to cover, Stephanie. I don't know how we're going to keep up. But we'll keep plugging away. We're going to be back. This podcast will probably go live Friday. And then we'll be back early next week with a discussion of things Middle East, including the recent events at the Saudi consulate in Turkey, as well as this story reported out of Global News involving an individual who's admitted to being essentially an active member of ISIS in detention with the Kurds. And that'll probably take us two podcasts to get through that particular story. We'll deal with the foreign relations and policy issues in the first podcast, and then we'll try to come back and deal with the criminal prosecution prospects and some of the issues that have been at play in some of the discussions in the media in a subsequent podcast. So lots that we've got on deck.
Yes. So stay tuned. Fall 2018 has been proving to be a bit of a wild ride, and I don't think it's going to get any calmer anytime soon.
And we have to get back to our C-59 story time at some point.
Oh, well, you know, Bob. The people want Bob.
We want Bob. Bob ups. Yeah, so we'll have to come up with all sorts of new nefarious plots involving Bob from Mordor. Thanks very much, everyone, and we'll see you soon.
See you next time.